Good morning. I'd like to call the Senate Finance Committee to order. Please silence all cell phones. Today is Friday, February 4th, 2022. It's 9 a.m. Present today is Senator Olson, Senator Wilikowski, Senator Co-Chair Stedman, myself, Senator Bishop. Senator Hoffman is in a meeting. He'll be on his way shortly. Senator Von Imhoff is online or listening from out of the building. And Senator Wilson, it will be on his way shortly. So we do have our teleconference moderators, Allison and Jake. Good morning. Thank you for being here. Today's agenda, Senate Bill 64, Capital Budget Overview. Mr. Steininger from OMB will come up and walk us through the presentation.
Good morning. For the record, Neil Steininger, Director of the Office of Management and Budget. And thank you for inviting me here this morning to present on SB 164, the Governor's Capital Budget Proposal. So capital budget items proposed on December 15th came in several forms within several appropriation vehicles. You have SB 163, the mental health budget, which includes mental health related capital projects. SB 164, which is the governor's normal capital budget, also including SB 164, but authorized by SB 166, our general obligation bond projects. You can see here the number $308.6 million there on the GO bond projects, and that's got an asterisk because there is one project that will be added through the amendment process that was included in the authorizing bill but not in the appropriation bill on December 15th. We've also utilized...
On that point, would that be the Long Trail project? Is that what's going to be added coming from the governor?
Chair Bishop, no, this is a fire hall in Kodiak.
Oh, fire hall. Okay.
We've also utilized surpluses, FY22 supplemental surpluses, to fund a number of capital projects. Those come in a couple of different places in the budget. Supplementals included in the standard capital budget, SB 164, total about $45 million. And then we introduced SB 165, which is a fast-track supplemental budget with more urgent capital items totaling about $48 million, as well as a small item in the regular supplemental budget of $200,000. All in unrestricted general funds capital proposals, there's $248 million in addition to that $300 million in general obligation bond packages. This matches to about $1.4 billion in federal funds for, you know, primarily your standard surface transportation match or village safe water, for a total of $2.1 billion in capital spending.
Mr. Steininger, since you just mentioned the Department of Transportation, surface transportation funding, does that include, is the $50 million sweep that we got in August from FHWA on their annual true-up when states have to submit any unobligated funds back to FHWA, then we were able to garner another $50 million. Is that included in here?
Chair Bishop, the Department of Transportation uses existing authority that it has. It generally has a little bit more federal authority in there. Surface transportation program in order to access some of that. I'm forgetting the word that they use for money sent back from other states that they're able to accommodate within transportation projects. And I think the Department of Transportation, I'm not sure if anyone is online, could kind of explain that process a little bit better, how they're able to, you know, access money that other states aren't utilizing from the surface transportation program to build projects in the state.
Yeah, I don't see anybody from transportation, but we're going to go deeper. This is just your overview today, so we're just throwing some things out here today. But thank you. Please continue.
And one thing to note up front, there's no use of any of the federal infrastructure bill dollars in the capital budgets that we've proposed. The only place in our budgets that we did use infrastructure dollars was in the operating budget for the Marine Highway System. But the reason for that really is that we don't have the information, or didn't have the information on December 15th to include it in the capital budget. The federal infrastructure bill was enacted on November 15th, just a month before our statutory deadline to release the operating capital budgets. That bill's a five-year reauthorization of established federal programs, things like the surface transportation program at DOT, and a lot of the details on the new programs or the increases to existing programs that the state will receive were still pending and are still pending, and so it wasn't appropriate to include them in the to include speculative numbers in the bill at that time. We're definitely increasing our knowledge on a daily basis, and we have a coordinator within the governor's office that is specifically assigned to ensuring that we're able to identify and provide budget amendments in the future for anything related to the federal infrastructure bill.
Okay. Please continue, seeing no questions. Senator Steadman?
Can you remind us what the statutory deadline is for amendments?
Through the chair, Senator Steadman, the statutory deadline is the 30th day of session. So we will be sending a packet of budget amendments, some of them mostly technical fixes to the budget, but also some new information that we've received by that 30th day. Appropriations related to the federal infrastructure bill may take us more time than that statutory deadline. And so we really appreciate being able to work with the legislature on being able to provide the best information possible and working within those timing constraints that we're running into with getting information from our federal partners.
Thank you. And with that being said, we might have to start working with maybe a little bit of co-chair Stebno. Him and I haven't even talked about that because you just teed this up. We might have to be in a little bit closer contact on what we're all learning on information to when we do start running up against this 30-day hard stop. And last year we were in your office numerous times working on this capital budget. I don't see any meetings scheduled to date unless I'm out of the loop. Senator Steadman?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My understanding from the administration is that they've got a worker assigned to the infrastructure package monies, Mr. Baker, to help unwind some of this and monitor that. And I was just wondering if there's just for planning purposes, when we could expect, or when the co-chair here on the capital budget can expect a kind of an outline or a status, so we can try to synchronize the operating budget flow with the capital budget flow. If he had any information on that, would be beneficial.
Through the chair, Senator Steadman, we would be happy to bring Mr. Baker into the committee to present on the infrastructure bill and what we know, or make him available in any way that helps the committee to deliberate through this process.
Thank you. Please continue.
And so slide four is giving a short look back to fiscal year 19 of the last couple of capital budgets that have been enacted, inclusive of the proposals before you released on December 15th. Over the last couple of years, unrestricted general fund in the capital budget has been constrained primarily to just covering match to federal programs, as well as a small number of discretionary capital priorities. In fiscal year 22, that changed a little bit, and there was a little bit more discretionary capital spending to invest in infrastructure around the state and invest in projects for economic development. In fiscal year 23, we're trying to continue to address that backlog of depressed capital budgets, creating a backlog of needs throughout the state. And so our capital plan includes both supplemental appropriations from fiscal year 22, as well as the issuance of a general obligation bond package, in addition to that standard capital budget. The just over the last several years, that depressed level of capital spending has generated a lot of need throughout the state.
Senator Stedman.
Can we get a rough breakdown of where the projects the last few years came from through this process, Mr. Chairman? Because referencing FY22, as I recall, the committee members never made any additions to the capital budget. All those projects were governor projects, and we took amendments clear up to the end. And I need to, through this process, be clear on not only where they came from, and timing, of course, which is just normal, but then under what prevailed in the authorized budget versus the submitted budget. And I assume here we're looking at the authorized budget. So we can keep track of flows, Mr. Chairman, as we try to put this process together.
Through the chair, Senator Stedman, your recollection is correct. The capital budgets enacted in fiscal year 22 were primarily proposed by the administration. Similar to this year, the administration proposed last year a more robust capital spending package than had occurred in prior years, really with the intention of trying to address that pent-up demand and need. And ultimately, many of those administration priorities were enacted in the fiscal year 22 budget.
And then there's some that are coming in this supplemental that were vetoed by those same projects.
Through the chair, Representative Bishop, yes, there were some projects vetoed in the fiscal year 22 budget, primarily as a result of constraint in revenue and the desire to use financing through general obligation bonds rather than state unrestricted general funds.
Senator Stedman.
So then if we don't go forward with this bond package, which we didn't last year, there was little interest in the bond package as a funding mechanism, bonds. We included quite a few of the bond of the, as I recall, we included quite a few of the projects that were in the bond package. We just changed the funding source. And we submitted on this table a balanced budget with a dividend, and every one of the governors, as I recall, every one of the governors requested capital projects. I don't recall us not adding any of the amendments. So the budget was balanced, and then it's fortunate that our revenue actually increased since then, and we have, as we all know, a little extra money in the middle of the year. But I think, Mr. Chairman, it's pretty hard to argue that it was a revenue constraint that led to vetoing projects that were requested by the administration, put in by this table. So just for clarity, as I recall, that was the process.
Thank you, Senator Stedman. Mr. Steiniger. And Senator Hoffman has been with us from some time, and I let the committee know and those at home, Senator Hoffman, you were on other state business in your office.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yep.
Thank you. The next slide just gives a little bit of a longer history look back at prior capital budgets. This gives a little more clarity to my earlier statement about depressed capital budgets over the last several years. You can see in fiscal year 13, we had an unrestricted general fund capital budget of over $2 billion. And then, through the decline in revenues to the state, that capital budget was really what was first, addressed as a way to save money. Discretionary capital spending was sort of one of the first things to go. You can see in those years subsequent to 2015, those capital budgets really were only addressing match for federal programs as well as, just the most urgent of capital needs to the state. And so this longer-term time period of low capital budgets has created a significant amount of capital need within the state, both for state facilities and outside of the state, and that's what we're trying to address with our capital package this year.
Please continue.
So slide five is just a top-level view of the fiscal year 23 capital budget by department. The fiscal 23 capital budget is primarily constrained to that core match concept that I mentioned, matching to federal funds. We're utilizing other sources of revenue to achieve some of those discretionary capital needs through supplementals as well as general obligation bonds. But you can see here that the departments with the larger amounts of state general fund dollars, like the Department of Transportation or the Department of Environmental Conservation, are also those departments with large amounts of federal funding coming in. And that's because those state dollars match to the federal dollars.
Please continue.
Now in slide seven and on, I am going into some detail on different projects in each agency. A lot of these in the fiscal year 23 capital budget are recurring projects that will be familiar to those that follow capital budgets year over year. Here in the Department of Commerce, we have the Community Block Grants, which is a significant federal match program, a very small amount of general fund dollars matching a large amount of federal money. We have a grant to the Interagland Ferry Authority for $250,000 of unrestricted general fund. The Interagland Ferry Authority is able to operate boats at a, kind of a much lower cost to the state, and it's been a great opportunity for a small amount of dollars to have a large amount of service. One thing of note here in the Alaska Energy Authority, as a result of strong earnings in the Power Cost Equalization Fund, the fund was able to spin off enough revenues to fully satisfy the waterfall in statute, which is allowing us to use $10 million of power cost equalization to match to federal dollars for rural power system upgrades, as well as $15 million to capitalize the renewable energy grant fund and issue a round 14 of those renewable energy project grants.
I'd like to go up to number five for a second. It's just a data point for the table and those people listening at home. Bulk fuel upgrades, $13 million. There's a $1 billion backlog in bulk fuel upgrades, so we got a big need out there in rural Alaska. That's just, you know, you got a $1.4 billion deferred maintenance at the university. The state has a $600 million backlog. We got a $1 billion backlog just in bulk fuel upgrades. So just putting it into perspective, it's just a data point.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Stedman.
I'd also like to add to that list, we've got a substantial list of deferred maintenance on our schools.
Yep.
And years ago, when we went through a very tight time frame back in the 90s of budgets, a couple of us were here, wasn't me, but I came in at the end of that, and one of the first things that I recall the Finance Committee did, and I was not on the Finance Committee at the time, but as I recall, I have to go back and look, it's been a while, but we took care of the entire list, the deferred maintenance list, and I want to say it was $300 million or some number. So we went through all, took the whole list off the table. The next year, the list came back, of course, because then people realized, school districts realized we were funding it, and they gave us a list. But I think we should keep in mind, Mr. Chairman, that our schools have gone through quite a few many years, and they have a substantial amount of deferred maintenance. And it's spread out all over the region, all over the state. So I think we should consider that for discussion at the table.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To dovetail on Chairman Stedman's comments, the money that we spend on deferred maintenance will extend the life of those schools, which will push the timeline for a new constructed facility in those schools out for several years, so the dollars that are spent on deferred maintenance, particularly for schools, and we are never going to get rid of schools, is actually one of the best investments that we can make. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you for your comments, Senator Hoffman. Mr. Steininger, please continue, sir.
So also to highlight here on slide 7, items 8 and 9, item 8 is $5 million of discretionary federal money in a grant to the Alaska Travel Industry Association for work they're trying to do to rebuild Alaska's tourism industry out of the pandemic. The Alaska Energy Authority also has been managing the state's money from the Volkswagen settlement that occurred several years ago. That money has earned interest in the account, and they need an appropriation in order to spend that interest earned on the activities under the Volkswagen settlement.
Thank you. Senator Hoffman?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Regarding number 8, I, as a senator, have supported that attention giving to the travel industry, but at the same time, I would say that trying to support the salmon industry in ASME to expand that product throughout the nation and the world is also something that needs to be done. And they, in the past, they have gone hand in glove. And I'm wondering if the administration has given any attention to the advertising of salmon through the ASME program, along with the Travel Industry Association's $5 million.
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, the Sifu Marketing Institute, ASME, we've worked with them with some of our discretionary federal COVID relief money through CRF distributions to get money to that that agency in order to address some of the funding shortfalls that they've had over the pandemic. So we are working with them to ensure there's some stability there. But you don't see a direct capital project here similar to ATIA. But we have been working with ASME to meet some of the funding needs that they have.
And a follow-up, Mr. Chairman.
Please, Mr. Senator.
And would it be comparable to the $5 million that we're seeing going to the tourism industry?
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, I know they received a $7 million $7 million distribution, but I would have to get back to the committee to get a total number of the amount of money that has been distributed to ASME over the course of the pandemic.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Senator Stedman?
This is a follow-up to Senator Hoffman's concern. The meetings that we've had, at least I've had the last few days, dealing with the fisheries and the magnitude of the market shift out of China into South America and other areas, you know, the international relationships that we're having difficulty with, I think is another added reason why we need to take a look at ASME. If there's that magnitude of shift underway, ASME may need some more assistance. And my understanding is that the fisheries has been opening up and expanding newer markets after being basically forced out of China to the benefit of, and including the U.S. market, by the way, not only South America, but the U.S. markets.
Other questions from the committee members? Mr. Steininger, just on the Inter-Island Ferry, if you can answer it, if not, just get back to my office or the committee of that $5 million grant to Inter-Island Ferry from last year, what the status is. And
Chair Bishop, unless there's somebody with the Department of Commerce online, which I'm not sure if they were able to make it, I can get back to you at a later date.
That's fine.
Yeah.
They're not. That's fine. Yep. Please continue.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Steininger, as you look at back at the last slide, number 10, Voice of the Arctic, can you remind the committee what's that, what that grant is for and how effective they've been in getting federal funds?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, yes, this is a continuation of a grant that was included in last year's capital budget. And I know that they've done coordination work with other state agencies on kind of a lot of the sort of states' rights issues that we've been working on as an administration, particularly in that region. And so there's a continuation of that work. And I think it'll be, we could get back to the committee with kind of a status report on the successes.
Sure. Yeah. Mr. Chairman, if I can explain, it's my understanding that one of the prime goals was to go ahead and open up federal lands in the NPRA morning. Areas up there on the North Slope, and I just was looking for a progress report on how effective they've been.
Thank you for the question, and we'll look forward to the answer from the administration when they provide it to the committee.
Moving to slide 8, two more Commerce Community Economic Development projects. The first is a named recipient grant or a grant to municipality to the city of Palmer for their wastewater treatment plant. This is coming from federal discretionary COVID dollars. One of the eligible uses for that is wastewater upgrades. And so we're utilizing that money to perform a wastewater upgrade in the city of Palmer. And there's also $25 million in discretionary federal money for mariculture incentive grant program. And the department is currently developing the terms of that grant program, and we'll be able to provide those to the committee with a more detailed scope of work around this project with exactly how it will be managed. And that $25 million is really looking to use some of that discretionary COVID relief money for economic development around the state. In the Department of Environmental Conservation, these are recurring capital projects that are in every budget and match to a significant amount of federal funding. The Clean Water and Drinking Water Capitalization Grant subsidies are a part of a loan program. And Village Safe Water, which is in two parts, first-time service, so establishing first-time service for communities, as well as expansion and upgrades, replacement of existing service. These programs are all impacted by the infrastructure bill, but these numbers represent sort of the baseline amount. And as we get more information, we'll provide budget amendments that will bring these up to the amount authorized in that infrastructure bill.
So with that being said, the rule of thumb has been 40% increase has been bandied about in those formula funds. Do you anticipate, would that be in the same ballpark?
Chair Bishop, the 40% sort of number that's been bandied about, we've been finding is not very consistent in the information we've gotten. Some of these projects have increased considerably more than 40%, and some we don't think we will actually need additional authority because the increase is relatively minor. So we can get more detail to the committee on that infrastructure bill package as we get that information. But you know, there will be a considerable increase in a couple of these, but not all.
Thank you. Senator Stedman?
I got a couple questions, just pretty high level, but here on number 11, City of Palmer, the wastewater treatment plant and improvements, I'm sure it's needed. But my understanding is the City of Anchorage is out of compliance. Ketchikan, Sitka, Wrangell, some of the smaller ones, Pelican. And I think the target towns in Southeast, anyway, I don't know where Anchorage is, and it's by far bigger than anybody else in dollars, is Wrangell and Sitka to bring them into compliance. And they're looking at substantial dollars to bring these the sewage plants into compliance. So just as a heads up to OMB, we got to come up with some way of of trying to assist the communities on their wastewater and their different dollar amounts. So at some point, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to be able to hear a little bit from the department or OMB or somebody on this particular matter. It's tens of millions for the little towns, or smaller towns, and Anchorage, I think, might be piles of hundreds of millions to fix the problem. But we have this infrastructure monies now, so it may be the time to address those bigger issues. And just a quick comment on that, I think for the city of Ketchikan, they're using a 250-mile dilution zone. And I don't know how many tens of miles for Sitka, but hell, you're out off the continental shelf. So it's ridiculous, the amount of compliance that they have to come into. And this is a federal requirement, not the state's requirement. So we need to get spun up on that, Mr. Chairman. And I'd like to also hear from our colleague, Senator Olson, he's got a water issue on one of the Western Islands, and I'd like to if I could, Mr. Chairman, have him remind the committee of that and give us kind of a quick update, because that's another issue of that has a time element on it.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Certainly, the people of Diomede, which is the place that's only a couple of miles away from the Russian island of Big Diomede, makes it pretty logistically difficult to go in there, but the people still need, and during this COVID period, the need for water and sewer, an effective water and sewer system there is paramount. There are difficulties that are related to that, but I'm glad you brought it up, because it's one of those things that we need to address before we have a major outbreak, because the only way you can get in and out of there is with a helicopter. It's not like you can send an airplane out there if there's a medevac or if somebody starts to decompensate. You need to get somebody out of there and in a hurry. But it is one of those things that is sorely needed. There are certainly complications there, but nothing that we can't, as the governing body, can't go ahead and take on and essentially conquer and make it happen, so that those people can have some semblance of what we have when we go to the bathroom and either flush the toilet or turn on the water to wash our hands afterwards.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to thank the administration for the environmental conservation's line items 3 and 4, but I would request if the administration can provide us a list of those communities that are still on a honey bucket system, and so we can look at the magnitude of the problem and try to get a handle on prioritization where we do have COVID and people are still not having the facilities that are enjoyed by a vast majority of people in rural and urban Alaska. So we need to continue to chip away to make honey buckets obsolete. So if you could provide that list to me and with the amounts, and if the rest of the committee wants it, that would be greatly appreciated, so we can have that perspective. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Bring that request to our office and we'll distribute it. Thank you. Mm-hmm. And for those listening at home that are following this capital budget, you know, we don't sit here at this table and pick those sites on 3 and 4. They're in a ranking system that comes from the department, so there's parity and takes the by severity. They have a ranking scoring list speaking specifically to the points that Senator Hoffman brought out, is those communities. So please continue. Okay. Senator Wilson, did you have a question?
Yeah, just a comment, Mr. Chair. I think the folks may not know that MAPSU does not have enough wastewater facilities in their own area. So we also overburden Anchorage to bring them to capacity. So having additional wastewater treatment plant capacity will help lessen that burden on the municipality of Anchorage as well.
Yeah, there's needs all over the state, you know, and I got mixing zone issues in the city of North Pole right now that needs a several million dollars that they've been trying to get for several years. So we've all got needs, right? And we, like Senator Stedman said, we didn't set the 5 NTU qualification. That was set at the federal government level for discharge. Please continue.
So slide 9, continuing with the Department of Environmental Conservation. We have $5.7 million in federal funds for the Fairbanks PM 2.5 issue for voluntary heating changeout, as well as a EVOS project for impaired beaches of just over $650,000. In the Department of Family and Community Services, we have a mental health project for deferred maintenance and accessibility improvements. This is half and half state dollars and mental health trust dollars. And we have a number of technical capital items in the capital budget related to the executive order to split apart the Department of Health and Social Services. So when you look in the language section of the bill, there's a number of technical items just to reassign those projects.
Thank you. Please continue.
On slide 10 in the Department of Fish and Game, we have several recurring projects related to recreational boating and angler access and research activities and maintenance on aircraft and vessels for the department. We also have a couple of new projects from EVOS distributions, the Kenai Peninsula cost share, Prince William Sound pollock and herring interaction, as well as a mariculture project studying the impact on marine mammals. Item 9 is a new item that we've added to the capital budget this year for the Department of Fish and Game, and this is just to allow the department to use the proceeds when they sell a vessel or aircraft, to use those proceeds for the maintenance or replacement of vessels and aircraft. So it allows them to sell boats or motors and then replace those boats or motors.
With that being said, Mr. Steininger, how do we know what your maintenance costs are? Is that going to be, if this was come to pass, is that going to be reflected in your budget that we could see as an expensed item?
Chair Bishop, yes. So the way this would work is the capital budget would show the revenue collected from the sale of the boat or aircraft and then an expenditure on that, and that would be included in our annual capital appropriation status report. And that's where you would be able to see the expenditures that occur.
Thank you. Senator Hoffman?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I made the statement several times, and I know you can appreciate it, Mr. Chairman. The state of Alaska is going through probably the worst hits to Chinook salmon through the state's history this last year. No one was able to fish for salmon on the Yukon. They were assisted by a private entity, which is the Bristol Bay region, giving them salmon. The state did very little, if anything, trying to alleviate the hardships that the villages on the Yukon have experienced. The problem is a statewide problem. We've seen declining stocks of Chinook starting in Alexandria Creek many years ago, over a decade ago. That's, I believe, in the center to my rights district, but that has expanded throughout the state of Alaska. This last year, we've seen the first major decline in chum salmon, but if you look, and we know these are major issues to the state of Alaska, but if you look at the budget for the Department of Fish and Game, it does not reflect the fact that this is going on and something needs to be done. I've asked you and the administration to look at that and see if we can do something proactive to turn this around. The chairman stated several days ago that they appreciate the fact that the Bristol Bay region assisted them in getting some salmon for the season, but he also stated that they would rather be out there subsistencing and catching their own salmon. So some of these issues, and I know we have the Pacific Salmon Treaty Chinook Fisheries Mitigation of $6.4 million in the budget, but those are federal dollars. Where is the state of Alaska's, where are they showed that they're participating in the game? Everybody in the state, you know, if there's one species of salmon, it's the Chinook, and everyone in Alaska prizes the catching the Chinook salmon. So to me, this project list by Fish and Game does not, in my view, reflect the fact that Chinook salmon are the number one species of salmon that Alaskans are after, and it certainly does not show that we have skin in the game to try to revert the problem that exists. So for the second time, I would ask if you can come back to this committee. And if it's no, we need to know that as well. If we don't want skin in the game for Alaskans to expand or turn around the problems that we have, at least with this species and probably in the future with chums, I need to know that from this administration. Alaskans need to know that. So I think it's an important issue, but it's an issue that's being ignored. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you for those comments, Senator Hoffman. I was going to yield to the senior senator and let him kick that conversation off, and then I'll dovetail in behind him and say that you can just put his comments times two on the record. I don't see anybody from Fish and Game, unless I'm missing something here on this iPad. I don't see Fish and Game on the call today. Do you, Jake? He's shaking his head no. But I'm sure they've got the memo from the finance table on the Chinook salmon on the Yukon, Kuskokwim, and Chum Salmon River. So, Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. All three of us represent portions of the Yukon River. We just had the mayor of Potted Station come by here, as well as another gentleman, Art Heckman, from there. And their biggest issue had to do with this is the second year, they've not been able to go ahead and put their nets into the river with the threat of significant repercussions coming from the law enforcement people. And so from what I'm seeing here, there seems to be a disregard on part of the administration to go ahead and include it in some of their issues that either they're not getting the gravity of it, or there seems to be a disregard for ignoring the plight that these people are in.
Thank you for your comments, Mr. Steininger. I think you've heard the table, and those comments will be conveyed back to the department. We expect to hear a response back of your action items going forward on this issue. Thank you.
Moving to slide 11, in the Office of the Governor, we have $23.9 million in designated general funds for statewide deferred maintenance, renovation, and repair. This money comes out of the Alaska Capital Income Fund, which comes from earnings related to the Amaretta Hess settlement. This is in the Office of the Governor to allow for statewide distribution of deferred maintenance dollars based on prioritization across departments and across facilities. In the Department of Health, we have several mental health projects recommended by the Mental Health Trust. some of which have mental health dollars matching to state dollars. We also have the Code Blue project. This helps purchase emergency medical services, vehicles, and equipment for communities. And again, we have some reappropriations or technical items to just adjust capital projects based on the executive order.
Senator Wilikowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just curious why that $23.8 million for deferred maintenance is in the governor's office and not in, say, the Department of Transportation.
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, we began putting statewide deferred maintenance into a more or less a single appropriation. There's some separate appropriations for the court system. However, we've put them in the office of the government or governor starting, I believe, in fiscal year 18. It might have been, I believe it was fiscal year 18 when that started. The purpose for that was to allow for distribution across facilities owned by different agencies or operated by different agencies. Prior to that, the appropriations for deferred maintenance would go to specific agencies. So to health and social services for facilities they operate, to fish and game for facilities they operate. But what we were finding is that some facilities, because it was subject to a, the kind of defense of department by department in the moment, some facilities were getting neglected and having significant deferred maintenance needs rise up, while other agencies may have had significant excess deferred maintenance funding that was ending up being deployed on projects that were, you know, necessary and good, but not necessarily the highest need within the overall picture of state facilities. So we moved this into a single appropriation in the office of the governor. The reason it's in the office of the governor is because there's no one state agency that, you know, other than the office of the governor that doesn't have sort of a stake in trying to ensure that deferred maintenance spending is within their agency on their facilities. So we've been able to establish a facilities council that walks through the different agencies' prioritization and tries to make decisions on a statewide need basis to ensure we don't let, you know, certain facilities languish while others are, you know, maintained to a much higher standard. And that we can go into a lot more detail. I believe we have scheduled a meeting to discuss some of that prioritization process and the, you know, kind of different factors of need and use case that go into it.
Follow up, Senator Wilikowski.
So, if basically, if I'm understanding it, it's there are turf fights over who needs funding for deferred maintenance, and rather than having a particular agency like DOT decide that, it's given to the governor's office. Is that a fair, an accurate assessment?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, yes. And this is managed by the Office of Management and Budget. And that has allowed us to work with that council to ensure that there's, you know, kind of the needs of each agency are being weighed against each other in a, you know, manner that takes in the statewide perspective.
Senator Wilikowski.
Yeah, just, and I sort of see pros and cons to it. On the one hand, you have a bureaucratic organization which would be deciding where the funds go versus a very political agency. And that could be good or it could be bad. I'm just curious, do you have a, or could you get the committee a listing of the where the funds have been spent since 2018?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, yes, that will be part of our presentation on deferred maintenance.
Thank you.
And along the line, the fourth question to his line of questioning, is your internal rates cheaper than DOT's internal rates for managing it?
Chair Bishop, we don't charge anything as the Office of Management and Budget for this.
So the answer is yes, it's cheaper for you to do it than DOT to manage it.
Chair Bishop, though, I will note that DOT does still manage a lot of these maintenance projects because they have the facilities maintenance personnel.
Yeah. Tell, give us the internal rate that DOT is charging to manage those projects.
Chair Bishop, we'll include that in our presentation.
Thank you. Senator Stedman.
Just on that, Mr. Chairman, it'd be nice to add a reach back for a few years, not just the last year on the overhead of DOT, but so we can see trends. This is if we adjusted budgets, sometimes the agency wants to, like a sponge, move around and protect itself or whatever. I'm not saying they're doing that, but I just think it'd be good for us to have a little bit of history on it. I'd also like to note, just to add to Senator Wilikowski's comments, I don't know if it's good or bad, the new system, we've never really reviewed it. If it's been more beneficial than what we did previous, you know, to 2018. But we need to take a look at how we did DOT last year, where we worked with OMB, we worked with DOT, and we came up with how we did their budget and how we did the appropriation for federal funds and as a separate allocation, so we could, part of the federal funds on a separate allocation, so we could see more clearly in a transparent way where those, when those funds were accessed and where they went. And we were under the impression here that everybody was in agreement, OMB, DOT, and the legislature, and the governor vetoed that $100 million appropriation.
300.
Pardon me?
300.
Okay, 300 million, lots of hundreds of millions. We need some, I guess, some information from the administration so we know what to do with DOT's budget on the capital side and it affects the operating side. And we spend a lot of time collectively working on that transparency issue. And I think it came as a surprise. I don't know if it was a surprise to, came as a surprise to DOT anyway and the legislature on that veto, and it was federal money. So we need to come up with how we're gonna deal with the capital budget in that process, and then we can sync up the operating budget accordingly and put a package together where there's no, you know, surprises.
Senator Wilson and Senator Hoffman.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Just two questions for the director. On the statewide maintenance, is the system that OMB is currently operating, this new system, is this part of that new package? Then they buy a new software to manage their deferred maintenance. Is that being used for this project?
Through the chair, Senator Wilson, the CMMS, computerized maintenance management system, I believe that's the acronym, DOT is still in the deployment phase of that. And so that system, once all the information about each state facility is in it, will help inform those decisions of the facilities council. Right now, because that system isn't fully deployed and fully operational, we're still reliant on more self-reported information from the agencies that manage these facilities. The goal with that software system is to have a more objective kind of hard data that would help inform those decisions, and then the council would make kind of prioritization decisions based on if, you know, that hard data, you know, doesn't kind of work out to other known needs. But the goal is to have very data forward process.
If I could, Mr. Chair, my second question. On numbers 5 and 6 under health, do you have an estimate about how much is being reappropriated in those two categories, if that can be provided to the committee?
Through the chair, Senator Wilson, yes, we could provide a list of that. I will note, these aren't reappropriating old capital projects that have finished for new purposes. It's taking existing active capital projects and just making sure they're assigned to the correct department. But we'll provide that list.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Regarding the housing of the maintenance program in the governor's office may have some merit, but it does not give the legislature the opportunity to say what our priorities are. Several years ago, Senator Stedman convinced this committee that we needed to increase DOT's deferred maintenance because of all of the people of the state of Alaska coming to us and saying we needed, our roads need attention, our docks need attention. So they convinced us to add several millions of dollars to DOT's budget, which allowed the legislature the power to prioritize that as an issue. In the past, we've also looked at the university's deferred maintenance and said that the administration is not spending enough in that category, so we increased that as well. So I don't know if this is the way to go, because it takes the prioritization of what our constituents may need out of the hands of us as the appropriators, and gives that very important power to the governor's office. I could see why the governor would propose such an appropriation, but from a viewpoint of us trying to address the concerns of our constituents, I find it hard to tell them that, well, we thought it was a priority to go in a certain direction, but we gave that power to the governor. So I have a little bit of concern regarding that, and how we, with this approach, how we would be actually representing the constituents in our districts as it relates to deferred maintenance. The question that I have, if we proceed with this, would there be an additional person added to the budget, or who in the governor's office would be working on working with all of the departments? I assume rural school deferred maintenance would be part of this, the university deferred maintenance and others would be competing, but who would be the all-powerful making that decision?
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, so there's no new position needed for this. This has been ongoing since 2018. So we've, over the time, we've generally had the OMB capital coordinator coordinate the work with the deferred maintenance or the facilities council, and work with them on that prioritization. And we've tried to keep the prioritization and distribution to what's recommended by that facilities council, and not, we're trying to be sort of a mediator in the discussion and not the ultimate decision maker or director of the money, so that the direction and prioritization of deferred maintenance dollars through the state is as arm's length away from political process as possible, because we're looking to try to ensure that it's based on facility needs and facility use. And I know there's no, to opine a little bit, there is no perfect system for the distribution. Your concerns are very valid in terms of, you know, how do you as the legislature ensure that projects that you know are vital to your district, to ensure that, say, a pioneer home in your district is adequately maintained. That's a very, you know, important consideration for the legislature. And that's those needs and uses, you know, life, health, safety of a deferred maintenance project is part of that objective criteria we apply, and then get that recommendation from the facilities council. So we do try to care for those types of needs. But I do understand that this is a, you know, there's not a perfect process, because to kind of go back to what I was talking about, why we moved to this process in 2018, the right words for this, there sometimes areas received more deferred maintenance funding than other facilities that had significant needs, you know, because there was a more political expediency to one project versus another. And we're trying to ensure that some buildings that may not have, you know, necessarily certain types of support are still maintained and don't crumble. And so there is a sensitivity in trying to ensure that we're able to achieve all those needs without, you know, having deferred maintenance funding weighted in one direction or another. So yes, we're happy to come in and talk through a lot more of the decision-making criteria as part of our deferred maintenance presentation, give a lot more information into how the sinking goes and how we try to keep it objective to the facility needs and the use within the agencies. But I do understand there is not really a perfect system for this. We're just trying to figure out the best way to address deferred maintenance needs throughout the state.
Senator Hoffman, then Senator Studman, and I'm going to weigh in.
Just to follow up, I guess, your comments are in regard to the Dunleavy administration, but we may have a new governor that has different ideas and may not use that approach. And we don't know who the next governor is going to be, and that governor is going to make those decisions. And there is no way for you to hold them accountable to follow through with the approach that you mentioned, and there's no way that we can either. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Senator Stedman, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think it'd be a good idea that we take a look at what Senator Hoffman's concerned about and have these funds broken down. Clearly there's, and also I think, Mr. Chairman, it'd be nice to go back a few years and look at the budgets we've put together and what the final enacted budget is, where the vetoes were and what projects have come back in. My concern is we look at a budget submission like last year, we include everything, and the governor vetoes a bunch of his own stuff. And you can't argue that there wasn't the funds there. We spent many hours making sure that we cash flowed the state plus paid a dividend. So I don't know if these projects are legit or not. How many of these projects are just political bait? So I think we need to take a look at that. Because clearly, as Senator Olson referenced, an agreement, we didn't add anything at this table. We heard from committee members, co-chair and myself, numerous members, that we're not adding. Everything's being left up to the governor. Well, we saw that result. So I think that we need to take a look at that and reconsider how we're not only dealing with the DOT projects, but the entire process. And I would ask our OMB director, if it's not a legitimate project, don't put it on the table. And if the governor brings us a project and we put it in the budget, I think we'd expect an implemented project. So I would ask the co-chair of the capital budget to go back and look and bring forth the data to the committee so we can make the best informed decision we can as we move forward and how we're going to allocate funds around the state and what projects the legislature feels from our constituents need to move forward or be addressed, and be very careful with appropriations that are just a one sentence, $23.8 million. And it could be $100 million or $300 million, but we need to be a little more cautious, I think.
So you're going to come back because we still got 14 more slides to go. So depending upon how we get going here today, but this is a good conversation. But so, Senator Olson, you want to go? Because I can clean up when we're done on this deferred maintenance topic. But I got about a 5-minute oratory speech.
Mr. Chairman, thank you very much for this opportunity to voice a concern that I have, especially to the OMB director, and I realize it's not your fault. You're an employee that does a very good job, and we have a fair amount of trust in what you do and how you do it, because you've been working there for a while. But last year we saw a bunch of federal money that we had thought we had distributed, and the governor went ahead and put it into road projects in his, where he lives now, which is in the Matsu area. And I'm not looking to pick a fight with the respected senator from the Valley, but when you look at this, it should come from him that it comes there, not from the governor. And I guess it all stems back to what was discussed by the senator from Bethel, is there's a general mistrust of the administration on certain occasions. And where I was first exposed to it was back when I first got here 20 years ago, when the governor, who had just come from obviously a larger federal system, where he went ahead and got money. We were told at this committee it was not for a jet. And as soon as the money was allocated, what did the Department of Public Safety do? They bought a jet. And the ultimate result of that was the then governor couldn't even make it through his own primary. And then we've got a new governor that came here. So there's this general mistrust that if we loosen our grip on the appropriations process, that we then, the people of all parts of Alaska tend to lose out on it. And so I'm very much not in favor of something like when I see, as was pointed out by the senator from Sitka, get $24 million out there. I never realized it's DGF, but it's just going to a statewide deferred one sentence, as he put it, one line sentence out there. And so that's where I'm coming from, Mr. Steininger. And like I said, no disrepute on you, but it's just one of those concerns that just raises a red flag.
I would have expected a man of your caliber in the aviation industry to even say it wasn't a very good jet they bought.
Yeah, the jet wasn't even made in this hemisphere.
Yeah.
A jet commander, my God.
Senator Wilson.
Just a quick comment, Mr. Chair. I think the senator from Golovin forgot to mention that it took a governor from Wasilla to fix that error in that purchase.
Thank you. Senator Wilikowski, you're quiet. Did you want to weigh in on anything? I teed one up for you earlier and couldn't even get a bite. So, okay, so deferred maintenance, $23 million, doesn't make any difference. Here's the problem. Cash is king. And until we start stepping up to the plate as policymakers, working with the administration, you're going to keep going around this toilet bowl having this conversation every year. When I started in the administration in 2006, the deferred maintenance number was $1.9 billion, and I about fell over. Somebody coming in from the private sector into government and looking at that number, and I said, you've got to be kidding me. Deferred maintenance is a liability. It's a dirty word on any general contractor's balance sheet. And that's the way I look at it. So these two guys put $1,025,000, approved it. The governor, Parnell, authorized it, $125 million a year for 5 years, beat it down from $2 billion to about $1.6. We know where we're at with our monetary policy, what has happened, and now it's back up to $2 billion again. We're never going to get off this treadmill until we make some policy decisions in tandem with the administration to take care of this issue. Notwithstanding, yeah, we'd like to see the projects, we want to see the detail, all of that. So I'm done. I say it every year. So, Mr. Steininger, you're doing a hell of a job. Keep going.
So, continuing with the Department of Health, we have a project to help support the creation of e-forms and online noticing for the Division of Public Assistance. This is half state dollars, half fed. The state dollar match, though, is coming from discretionary federal dollars. So that's $4 million from the SLRF fund, or the money out of ARPA. There's also the replacement, a phase of the replacement for the eligibility system within the Division of Public Assistance. This is a first phase. There will be follow-on phases with additional federal match and state money required, but this is what they'll be able to accomplish over the next couple of years. And this is to replace a very outdated system. They're currently operating eligibility at Division of Public Assistance out of two systems, which generates a lot of inefficiency in being able to cross-reference applicants across the systems. And we also have a coronavirus capital project funds project for $30 million related to health record infrastructure improvements. The department will be seeking approval from the Treasury for the project plan. Those project plans will be able to be submitted here in the next couple of weeks, and we can start working with the U.S. Treasury, who has to approve these projects, to work on the scope to ensure that it meets the coronavirus capital project funds rules. In the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs, we have deferred maintenance for DMVA facilities. These facilities are, the maintenance is paid for with federal dollars, as well as state Homeland Security grant programs, $9 million in federal funds.
Senator Wilikowski.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just looking at the backup on item number 9 there, the $30 million. It says the ability to readily share health records enables work as employers implement vaccine and testing requirements. Can you explain what's going on here with this?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, I'll do my best. I'm not sure if somebody from Department of Health and Social Services is on to provide more information. So the idea here, one of the requirements under coronavirus capital project funds for projects that are eligible are, you know, things that meet some of the health needs brought about or exacerbated by the pandemic. And the sharing of health information is one of those things that we've identified over this time period. As we work through looking at the guidance, as we get more information from the Treasury and refine that, we may have changes to the scope to kind of give a better understanding of how health record information systems best fit within the purpose from the Treasury of this funding. But I think maybe for more detail, I might with
Sylvan Robbs chat. Online.
Thank you.
If you'd like her to take a stab at that, Senator, or are you good? Senator Wilikowski, would you like Sylvan Robbs to some more detail, sir?
Yes.
I defer to Senator Wilson here.
So we'll go to our resident health HES expert, Senator Wilson. Senator Wilson.
Yeah, thanks, Mr. Chair. I do want that explanation because, you know, I'm looking at the state's health information exchange and infrastructure services, and I think the state of New York was able to do their entire hospital infrastructure and create an EHAN for less than $12 million. And so I just don't understand where $30 million is going to go to. If the state of New York can integrate their entire healthcare system for less than $12 million, why do we need to spend $30 on ours?
Sylvan Robb, Deputy Commissioner, Health and Social Services, can you hear us?
I can. Thank you, Chair Bishop. For the record, this is Sylvan Robb with the Department of Health and Social Services. Through the chair to Senator Wilson and Senator Wilikowski, as Director Steininger indicated, we are working through the requirements for the use of these Section 604 funds for this coronavirus capital project funding. There are four things that need to be met in order for projects to be eligible for that. They have to address the ability to enable work, education, and health monitoring, as well as being items that were highlighted during the course of the pandemic as being needs. So as we're looking through the health information exchange and how to move forward with that, we're trying to work to align what the department's needs are with what's allowable through the use of these funds.
Senator Wilson?
Yeah, I didn't really answer the question, I guess, Mr. Chair. Maybe I can just follow up offline or some more information can be given in terms of enabling the work and health education monitoring for $30 million. Again, you know, the chief medical officer and state larger than ours did $12 million, who's now, I think, the medical director at Stanford University, but they were able to do this for a lot less in terms of getting their hospitals all on the same, you know, sort of exchange information. So in a state population of 740,000, give or take a few, 10 or 12, I just don't understand the costs under this. And especially going back to since 2010 in terms of getting this sort of EIH together. And so I'm just, as the project has not been moving, I'm just dumbfounded, Mr. I'll stop.
Ms. Robb, I think you can hear from the questioning, and we're going to go to Senator Wilikowski here, but I can tell you right now the committee is going to want to see a more detailed spin sheet for the $30 million. Senator Wilikowski?
I'm just still trying to understand exactly what this does. As I read this, it looks like what this would allow is for employers and schools, education facilities to go into some sort of database where they could find out whether someone's gotten COVID testing, whether someone's had a vaccine. Is that accurate?
Ms. Robb?
Through the chair to Senator Wilikowski. What you are describing, Senator, would not be allowed under the Health Information Portability and Privacy Act under HIPAA. Health information is private, as I think many of us have become familiar with in the many years since that law was passed. We're trying to work to connect the information that we have within the state. So many healthcare providers, and one of the reasons it's challenging in Alaska, is that, you know, we have our tribal health system, which is very robust. We have all the many hospitals that we have throughout the state, and getting all of those different entities that have their own health information system or electronic health record systems connected. And so that's what we're trying to achieve. But we are certainly not trying to enable employers or others to have access to people's private health records.
Senator Wilikowski.
Okay, thank you. I'm glad to hear. I was concerned about the HIPAA aspects of this, but in the summary of the statement of need, it says just the opposite of what you just said. It says the ability to readily share health records enables work as employers implement vaccine and testing requirements. So it would certainly appear that by what the summary says is that employers hire workers and they want to check and see whether they've had vaccines or tests, they're going into some sort of state database. So maybe you need to update the summary or the statement of need, because that does appear to be inaccurate.
Thank you for your question, Senator. Ms. Robb, you want to comment?
Through the chair to Senator Wilikowski, I was just going to note that people have the ability under HIPAA to allow people access to their health records. So if that was something that individuals were willing to do, if an employer wanted to learn some of that information about perhaps vaccine status, as long as the employee waived that option, that is allowable under HIPAA.
Senator Wilikowski.
I'm going to end at this point, but and I guess that concerns me a little bit, because if you have employers who are saying as a condition of employment you have to give up your HIPAA rights, that would concern me as well. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Wilson.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, it just sounds like we're just trying to justify COVID funds for an ongoing project that extends back to 2010, because when you read the justification, it doesn't really talk about COVID. It just talks about the program description, which really doesn't discuss the COVID. I can understand you can make that relation and correlation, but it just doesn't. It just seems that that's the case. And I'll ask that to the director. Are we just trying to offset some of UGF spend by using COVID funding to sort of stretch the utilization of COVID funds to meet this criteria to fund this project?
Through the chair, Senator Wilson. In a short answer, we look to find existing projects that would meet the coronavirus capital project fund requirements, so that we could use this available funding to meet existing state need and not generate new spend, but look for areas that were existing projects, existing needs, that also had an aspect that brought them in line with these coronavirus capital project funds.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Steiniger, please. I want you, we're going to take a brief at ease. Don't anybody go anywhere. We're back on the record. Great conversation. We're going to stop here today. We're going to stop on this topic. We're going to come back next week. We will have this meeting scheduled as soon as we can next week, and we'll pick it up on page 13 and start with natural resources. So with that being said, Mr. Steiniger, thank you for a job well done so far today. And we will adjourn. And let me see if I missed anything. Our next meeting is Monday morning at 9 a.m., operating supplementals, and Mr. Steiniger will be back. So with that, we're adjourned.